Today's daf in Masechet Kiddushin is daf Beit, and we start a new exciting Masechet, Bezrat Hashem, today. And as usual, all types of great secrets and depths are hidden in the Gemara's simple discussions about the Lashon of the Mishnah and so on. But before we begin, let's just recognize that what we have in front of us is a fascinating interrelationship between the actual nature of marriage and the modality in which a marriage is actually created. So you wouldn't have thought that the relationship of marriage has anything to do with the standard nature of kinyanim, because kinyanim is talking about ownership. And there it's a question of course, doing an act that would be koveya, an ownership of that which you're coming to own. There's no such concept, as we've seen many times, we've just had in Gittin a few times even, that the isha is not gufa enaknuyolo. Therefore, the Gemara even asks, why would somebody use these kind of languages when it comes to the nature of an isha? So in what sense would there be a kinyan that would define the nature of ishus? That's one question that we have to have, which of course leads to another question, and that is the status of ishus a result of the kinyan, or is it the definition of the kinyan? In other words, do you first do this kinyan that would be like the same type of thing that you do, except for different reasons, on other things, like a field, and as a result of that, the status of the woman as being asura to everyone, that devolves from the fact that there was a kinyan? Or does the kinyan itself result from the fact that this action asurs the woman on everyone else? We'll be talking about that issue as well. There's also another very important thing to consider, and that is that the kinyan of ishus is rather separate in practical terms from the actual relationship of ishus, by virtue of the fact that we have two completely different stages when it comes to ishus. We have what is called erusin, or kiddushin, and then we have nisuin. Now, even though nowadays people don't even notice that, because they do the kiddushin 5 minutes before they do the nisuin is what we call the chuppah. But the chuppah is really the equivalent of bringing your bride home. So it's machnisa lebeito. The chuppah becomes that, it's actually big machlokas and different minhagim, Ashkenazim, Sfaradim, different poskim, what the actual bringing the woman into your home is. The chuppah, the yichud, and so on and so forth. Fine. But the point is that that's a completely separate idea, because the truth is, even after erusin, which is another way to say kiddushin, there is still no marital relationship that's permitted with this woman. So, like, what is this relationship? You're not allowed to be sleeping with her. So what is it that you've done? What is the meaning of that stage? Remember, that stage used to be up to a year, during which the woman would prepare for the actual knisa to the chuppah and so on. But then the chuppah itself is not this type of kinyan at all, because over there we don't have any of these actions that create the kinyan. So what is the knisa l'toch beito? What type of thing is that? What does it do? What's its implications that suddenly turns it into the reason that now you're living together as man and wife? And what is the meaning of a relationship of a wife where there's no sexual relations that are permitted? Very, very strange issues that, of course, change completely the way that we would view generally marriage. And that's how the Rambam even begins his entire discussion, by describing what used to be, once upon a time, in the old caveman times, you know, a man would meet a woman, they agree that they should be married, and then they move in, and that's the marriage. And that was the marriage. I mean, it was not called a common law wife, it was called marriage. And in violating that marriage, there would be a chiyuv of an eishes ish on a goy and so on. I mean, that was a real marriage. Then came along the Torah and created this idea of kiddushin, which we're going to be discussing. But then the issue is, so how does the kiddushin relate to the relationship itself of marriage? Okay, those are questions that we need to discuss. And of course, the modality of the kinyanim, of these stages, is also not so clear. I mean, remember, one of the ways that you do kiddushin is, strangely enough, sexual intercourse. How is that kiddushin if the kiddushin doesn't even allow sexual intercourse? I mean, this is weird. The Gemara later on is going to actually question whether, if you do kiddushin with bia, is that the equivalent of nisuin? So would that make just the kiddushin? Or since you've already gone all the way, so then that should be the actual nisuin. So this is the question. Bia erusinosa or nisuinosa, which we're going to be getting to very soon, that question. But then you have to ask yourself, if it's only erusinosa, so then how could it create an erusin when the erusin itself isn't even going to allow you to have those kind of relationships? And if it is nisuin oise, so then why isn't it, for all intents and purposes, the equivalent of the caveman approach? We've agreed that we should have sex together. And therefore, I mean, wouldn't it be nicer to take the caveman approach? Have her move into your house, at least, to be miyachida, and then sleep with her? I mean, here you're going to go sleep with her under a tree somewhere, and that's going to be the kinyan. It's very strange. All of these are questions that we need to take into consideration as we proceed through the Masechet, because obviously understanding the nature of these kinyanim and how they're phrased and what they achieve is going to make a major difference in how we appreciate the relationship that we call marriage overall. So let's begin with the Halakha Mishnah, which would deserve at least some faces. You know, we've got a Benny that's hiding, we've got a Naftali that's hiding, the man of the hour is hiding, Mordechai is flipping hamburgers, I don't know what he's doing over there. It's time to show yourselves, to be ready to fight. Man, oh man. Chickens. Okay. Very good. There we go. At least I know you're really there, as we can establish that.
I'm getting a meat from the Maksan down the street.
Ha'isha niknet b'shalosh drachim v'konat atzma b'shtei drachim. Boy, is this a loaded statement. Every last word over here is loaded. I mean, niknet is the passive, right? Aisha niknet. Why are we using that language? And we certainly don't mean the same type of kinyan we usually mean. And why do we define the ways as drachim? Why are they ways? Why aren't they just things? B'shlosha dvarim. I mean, what's this drachim? And why do we use the feminine for drachim? Usually we talk about, we'd use a loshen zocher. I should say, first of all, I mean, why does it use the passive? All right, all of these things. Ish kone? It should say, b'shlosha dvarim. Wouldn't that be fine? All of these questions, of course, are going to end up being meaningful, not only in terms of the language, but in terms of what they say about the entire idea. The konat atzma, and she gets herself back in two ways. So how is she niknet? Bekesev, bishtar, ubivia. So these certainly don't seem to be the same at all. I mean, kesev and shtar, that makes sense in terms of its being a pretty standard way of being kona things. Of course, intercourse is a difficult way to buy a car or a field, and yet some or other works over here. I mean, there are crazies, you know, I mean, that do try to buy their cars that way, but it's not a good idea. But the question over here would be, this kinyan that we have, that we're calling a kinyan of Bia, as we raised before, seems to be a completely different type of thing, unless it's going to be considered to be the equivalent of, so to speak, maybe a chazaka. So that if you put up a fence around a field, so you're showing an act of ba'alut, so might be a be'isha be considered to be showing an act of ba'alut, which, by the way, raises a very profound issue, perhaps the most profound of all. What in the world does sex have to do with kinyanim? Not only by Isha. Every act of acquisition results in what? Ba'alut. The word ba'alut means sexual intercourse. What in the world? How could we be using the same language for ownership in general, which has an English equivalent? I mean, we talk about husbandry, maybe animal husbandry, agricultural husbandry, but I mean, we don't call ownership of a car husbandry in any way, and yet we do call it ba'alut in terms of Torah. Now, that points to a much deeper connection than what we've been thinking about. It's not just the question of how do we interrelate the idea of kinyan to marriage, but rather the opposite. There's something much deeper. How do we relate the relationship of marriage to the concept of ownership when you don't even own anything in a marriage? Very, very weird. From no matter how way you look at it, we're talking about some profoundly important kind of ideas. Okay, so all of this we need to keep a wide open mind for. And obviously, gentlemen, it cannot be a coincidence that every type of possible kinyan is going to be discussed in our perek. It's all very nice to start with the issue of a woman, or in terms of Ishus, or in terms of Yavama, but we go on to discuss everything else. We talk about Avadim. Okay, Avadim, I understand. The law, law, Meisha. We talk about the Sode. I understand that too, because we end up doing Kicha, Kicha, Miste, Ephron. Well, we talk about Metaltalin. We talk about animals. I mean, this is like every possible variation. We talk about Chalifin, all kinds of things that are not Nogea here and are somehow part of our Perek, because the nature of Ba'alut becomes part of our Perek. That's absolutely amazing. Not to mention the fact that included in the Perek is the issue of how the relationship of Ba'alut affects the Chiyuv of Mitzvahs, because it talks over here as well in this Perek about the nature of mitzvahs that an isha is chayevet, mitzvahs that an eved is chayev, mitzvahs that a child is chayev to father, and that a father is chayev to child. So then that means very broad concept of relationship insofar as how it defines the existential stance of an human being vis-a-vis HaKadosh Baruch Hu is nogea, all of these aspects of kinyan. We're talking about some very primal ideas over here, and because of that, it's going to be going back to some very primal moments in Klal Yisrael's history as well, and obviously relates to the whole inyan of kinyan of Eretz Yisrael, mitzvahs that are tluyas ba'aretz, and so on, which again becomes very significant to us here in Kedushin, amazingly. Okay, so let's go over this again. So we've got three ways. Why ways? Three ways to be kona. That's not the way to talk about it. There are three things that should be kona a woman. Somehow or other, we're into ways. So the three ways to be kona a woman, two ways that she's kona herself. So she's niknate bekesef, so you could use money. It's not clear what that means. Does kesev mean a metal called silver, or does kesev mean money? This is a major machlokas rishonim. What the whole mokar is, and what the use of the word kesev, is that just a synonym for mammon, or is it a din particularly in kesev? If it's a din in kesev, and you would use the pruta that we're about to see that Beit Hillel says is the shear, then the problem would be that if you use a copper penny, which a pruta was made out of copper, it wouldn't be kesev. And then you would only be utilizing shave kesev, even though it's shaped like a coin. Or is the coin the point of kesev, and shave kesev is non-coin? This would have very important implications, as even contemporary dinim. So as Reb Moshe, for instance, held that kesev in the United States would be defined by a minimum of the worth of a penny, which was worth significantly more than the pruta that we're talking about over here in the Mishnah. In which case, shava kesev, it's defined first by that, by the minimal matbeya, as opposed to certain value. It means the kedushin wouldn't be chal with just a real pruta or a pruta's worth of kesev. All of this I'm just bringing up because it's so nice to know what the issues are that we need to take into consideration. Obviously, I don't mean to really go into them here, but I just think it's exciting to see what it is that we're dealing with. So kesev, shtar. Shtar would mean that the kesev, you give kesev by saying, arei et mekudeshet li, with this ring or whatever it is, or with this money. By shtar, you don't say anything like that. You don't say anything. You just write, arei et mekudeshet li. And that's the shtar. And there's no value that's exchanged at all. And bevia, you say, arei et mekudeshet li, bevia zu. So how much is this kesef? Bekesef. Picture, my omrim, bedinar uvshave dinar. Ubetilel omrim, bepruta uvshave pruta. Now the question is, the dinar was a known coin, but the pruta was not a known coin, because the pruta as a copper coin was not in effect at the time of the Torah. They only used kesef. And therefore, there was no such particular amount of value as a pruta, which leads, Bichlal, as I said, to the question of, okay, is the pruta what we're referring to? Is it a coinage? Or is it a certain amount of value of silver? Or is it a minimum coin, the way that Rav Meir suggests? All to be considered. But because we don't know what a pruta is, we have to figure out how much that is. V'kamahi pruta. So, I mean, the question, why don't we say, as Beit Shammai says, bidinar, dinar, that we know. So, one reason that we don't talk about the question of, and how much is a dinar, is because we're more interested in the halacha, which is a libra beit hillel, but also, and the Rishonim speak about both of these, also because the dinar was known. It was measured in terms of the known dinar zahav as 1/24th. But over here, the pruta was not known. So how much exactly is a pruta? So they had to relate a pruta to a coin that was current. Well, the coin that was current was the Italian iser. So the iser ha-italki was actually worth 8 prutos. So since it was well known what an iser ha-italki was worth, so because of that, we had our pruta defined in terms of it. But once that's true, so then we need to know that that iser italki, which is the actual Italian, Tosafot even talks about, where do we get the kuf in italki? Doesn't that bother you, italki? I mean, like, where did Italia, shel Yavan, become italki? Very strange. Tosafot says it is strange, but it's just sort of a way in which we see that we refer bichlal to these for instance, we find he brings Shushan. So Shushan does not have any kuf in it, but somehow or other, when it's used as an adjective, it turns into, as Tosfos brings, the concept of a Shushanchia. So Shushanchia. So I mean, like, the way that we call someone from a particular city will always add the type of sound, depending obviously on the way the word sings. You know, you'd have a Baltimorean, but you won't have a Johannesburgian, right? Okay. So if that's the case, the Italki is just sort of a way that we add a tone in, but don't let that trouble you. It's definitely, says Tosfos, Italia, exactly as it means. And so if that's the case, then we know that the Iser Hayitalki is actually 1/24th of a dinar, which would mean that the 1/8th of the Iser Hayitalki is 1/192nd part of the dinner of Beit Shammai. This is a major difference in terms of the shear of kesef. Okay? But this is what we've got. Echad mishmona b'yisrael italki. How is she koneh at atzma? Well, with a get. So you give her a get, and that is koneh her. Or with the death of her husband. B'mitat haba'al. It's a funny way to say kona at atzma. There's certainly no da'at acheret makne. So is it sort of not only a passive, but an emergent kona at atzma, that we use the word kona? I mean, I thought death is konat atzma only because there is no husband. So then she's left as herself for herself. In what sense would that be a kinyan? Also to be considered. How about a yavama? A yavama can only be niknet bivya. She cannot be niknet bekesev ubishtar. But remember that the Rabbanan created a concept of erusin, which is called ma'amar, when it comes to yavama as well. So if somebody gives a ring to yavama instead of sleeping with her and says to her that you are mekudeshet to me, so then she does become somehow midrabanan mekudeshet to the extent that it prevents the other brothers from doing the yibum. So it creates a problem. It doesn't really create a solution. Because if he wants to divorce her, he still can't divorce her. He's going to need to do chalitza. So the ma'amar does not take the place of a yibum at all. That's why we ignore it over here. She's only niknet bivya. But again, remember that the via of a yavama is an absolute kinyan. It's not a stage towards something, the way that it is possibly if you hold that bia is erisin osa when it comes to the woman who's not a yavama. So there, it's the complete closure of the relationship. And she can be kona atzma, not with a get, but only with chalitza, unless, of course, you already consummated the relationship with her as a yavama, and then she becomes your wife. At that point, there's no longer any need for chalitza. She's like anybody else. So she would be kona tatzma the same way a normal woman would, with a get or b'mitat habal. But if you didn't do the yibum, so then she would be kona tatzma to be free to marry whomever she wishes, b'chalitza uv mitat hayavam. So, the first question, says the Gemara, we have is the way that the Mishnah structures itself in terms of language and in terms of grammar. I mean, how come over here we say, Isha niknet? All right, so, I mean, look, we're going to be talking very soon about other issues, which are phrased in a very, very different way. Look, take a look at the way the second parak opens up. Ha'ish mikadesh. So forget about the difference between who is the active person, who is the passive. I mean, why are we presenting it passively? The first thing I want to know is why the difference in language. Is the issue over here stressing the kinyan or the kiddushin? Why can't we use the word kiddushin the way we do at the beginning of the second parak? Why do we start with Aisha niknet? And there we talk about mikadesh. We should either determine that we use the word kinyan or we use the word kiddushin. Well, says the Gemara, we have a very good reason for stressing kinyan here. Because our Mishnah is introducing something called kesef. Well, money is a kinyan. I mean, kiddushin seems to be just an outgrowth of the fact that you have this woman. But, I mean, kiddushin, that would have something to do with the results of this being your wife, as we'll see in a moment. So now, the reason that it's important to us to use the word kinyan when it comes to kesev is because how do we even know that there's a concept of kinyan isha with kesev? What does giving a ring or giving money have to do with marriage? So we learn that from an incredible gzeirat ha-katuv, in which the Torah talks about buying, and this, of course, is the original love story of a wife, which is Avram Avinu, who comes to bury his wife, Sarah. And it's at that point that we have our first kinyan in Eretz Yisrael, and that things start to come together. And it's from there that we end up learning the whole halacha of how to be kona a woman. Why? Because in terms of kiddushin, the Torah uses the word ki yikach ish isha. When a person, a man takes a woman, what does taking mean? It certainly doesn't mean having sex with her, because then it says waleha. So, I mean, it's not the same thing. So what is the ki yikach ish isha? Well, we learn that out from Gzeira Shava. when Avram Avinu went to buy the Marata Machpila, he brought, went to buy the Sada, the Stay Ephron. And he says to Ephron, Natati Kesev Asade, Kach Mimeni. So we're utilizing the new word Kicha that appears by the purchase of a Sada to the word Kicha that appears in Ki Yikach Ish Isha, which seems to say that in the same way that you could purchase a field, you can use the same type of kinyan at being able to be Yikach Isha. And we know that that idea of buying is called kinyan. And that's why we want to introduce the fact that there's a concept of kinyan that's involved in Isha. Now, we know that Kicha is called a kinyan. Where do we find that? Because we talk about the Maras HaMachpelah afterwards as HaSadeh Asher Kana Avraham. So then, okay, so then that means that this is opening our minds to the fact that there's something other than the actual marital act which is involved in marriage. Oh, this is wild. And not coincidentally, as you all know, remember we had 40 days before the birth of a child, it's announced in the heavens, this particular field will belong to this particular child one day, and this particular woman will be the wife of this child one day. So women, fields, destiny are all interrelated. And yet over here, we find that the way that you go about getting a field is not having it somehow fall down from outer space on your head, and that becomes your field. You go, you make money, you buy the field, and that was the field, that was destiny, right? Okay. Strangely enough, the same thing is being introduced to you in terms of how it is that you have a wife. She doesn't just fall in love into your lap. She rather requires a kinyan, the same way that the field does, which is why we want to talk about the word kinyan, because it's such a shocker. And therefore, we also find that the kinyanim of Sada are referred to as kesev kinyan, the interrelationship specifically, sadot ba kesev yiknu. So that means it's a specific relationship in which the way in which I purchase a field with money is called kinyan. Sadot ba kesev yiknu. And that's the kach mimeni, natati kesev asada. Now note that this is a very broad utilization of the terminology, because remember, as Tosis points out, when we're talking about datati kesev asade kach bimeni, what is the kicha referring to? The money. I'm handing you the money, take it. Here's the money, take it. Kach. But when we're talking about kicha in terms of the ki yikach ish isha, we're talking about the woman. I mean, it has nothing to do with it. It's not a reference to the soda, it's a reference to the cash. So as Tosis points out, the idea over here of the Gzeira Shava is a very broad idea that does not require that the utilization of the terminology be the same in both places. All that we need to show is that this concept of Kicha applies both to Isha and Sada. And once that's true, I want to show you that that is called Kinyan in the broader sense. And you need to understand that this is not just learning about money, about how to get a wife. It's teaching you about how to be kine, which is a whole new way of looking at marriage. And therefore, the Tana felt it's very important to introduce the Masechet with this idea. There's an idea called kinyan. Now you'll say, that only applies to money. And the Mishnah mentions over here three different issues, kesev, shtar, and bia. So why in the world are we only using the word kinyan because of the fact that it's found by money? Does that make sense? Why don't we say, don't you think that it would make more sense to stick with language that would be suitable for all three cases, or at least two out of three? And we're going to ask that question in a moment in other terms. So Tosfos says, okay, why don't we ask that? Because the truth is that the word kinyan also is found by shtar. Remember, it's called kesev, the sefer hamikneh, right? And we also find that there's a lotion of kicha that has to do with Bia as well. Ki kach, not only here, but ish ki kach et achoto. We find the Lashon of kicha is found that way. And therefore, there's nothing wrong with using the word kicha across the board, which is therefore kinyan. But this is all in terms of the language. We're looking for an excuse to bring out an idea. The concept that we must bring out is this concept called kinyan. And that's why it's so important that if we can utilize that word and show that the acquisition, there's no real English equivalent to the meaning of kinyan. Kinyan is a very profound concept in terms of Lashon HaKodesh, and it has all types of implications that are not in any of its English semi-equivalents, so that this idea of acquisition and possessiveness and so on are all obviously not truly part of Ishus, but the overall concept of kinyan is. And the way that that overall concept of kinyan, as we explained before, is itself related to the idea of husbandry and to a particular relationship which borders on the sexual with any object where a person has a certain connectedness, a chiba, a chavivus that he has, right? Roitza adam bekav shalo. A person would rather have his own towel. A person would rather have his own thing, even though it may not be anywhere near as nice as another one. This is mine. What does mine mean? There's this personal aspect of it, which is sensual, sexual, interrelated as a relationship. And therefore, this is involved in any concept of kinyan, amazingly. As I said, this is why our Perek talks about every single possible kinyan that is around in the Torah, as we're going to go through in this parak. So here too, it's important for us, if we can get away with using the word, then we want to get away with it, because that's what we're trying to give over. And therefore, kinyan is a usable word as the main definition of what enters into this state of erusin, which is not quite marriage. It's not engagement. It's not just betrothal. It also doesn't have any English equivalent. It is the relationship of marriage. Take this into consideration. The relationship of marriage without the sex. What does that mean? You see how different, that's why the Rambam contrasts it with the caveman approach, in which marriage is sex. No, the whole idea over here is that you would have a year of marriage relationship without any type of physical expression. That's absolutely shocking. It's the reason that we don't do it today is because people can't be trusted to have that level of relationship. What happens if, chas v'shalom, she gets turned on by somebody else during that time, in a time of loose sexual mores? You would be over on an Aishas Ish. People don't view her as an Aishas Ish. She's not living with a husband. She's totally an Aishas Ish. So because of the strange way in which people think today, which is so much part of external culture, culture of Esav, culture of Yishmael, so because of that, we don't do this anymore. And we actually destroy the whole meaning in things by doing the Kiddushin at the Chuppah so that there's not even 1 minute for anybody to get into trouble. That's like amazing. So to the point where people don't even realize that there's two totally separate steps, two totally separate brachas, to all kinds of different things that are going on under the chuppah. Nobody even notices, unless they're Talmid HaChachamim. Okay, so this is essential to us and completely changes the way that we appreciate what it means to have a wife. Astounding. And even if you used Bia to enter into that state, it is not necessarily matir sex for that year, for however long it is, between the Erisin and the Chuppah. Astounding. Okay. So therefore, it says, Aisha Niknet, we need to use that word. Oh, well, if that word is so important, then why don't we use it in the second parak? Why don't we say Ha'ish Kone instead of saying Ha'ish Mikadesh? Well, that's because first, we want to cue you into the way the Torah views the act that creates that. That's the Lishna Dioraita. But then in the second parak, we want you to understand the way the Rabbanan refer to this state that is achieved by such a kinyan, and it's called kiddushin. Well, where does that come from? Why would the Rabbanan have this? What does it even mean? My lishna de Rabbanan. Ah, the Rabbanan, they're using the word kiddushin because of its relationship to hegdash. Hegdash. I mean, we're talking about holiness? Exactly. What is the meaning of hegdash? That's because the osar lo akule alma ke hegdash. What results from this kinyan, possibly, we'll talk about this in a moment, but what emerges from this kinyan is the fact that now she becomes asura to everyone else as if you made her hegdash. Same way that we talk about a neder. If I want to talk about konem ze'alecha, it means you're not allowed to eat it because to you it's like hegdash. Well, the same thing is true about this woman. You're not allowed to eat her because to you it's like hegdash. But I understand, but if it's to you it's like hegdash, so why do I call it mukadesha to me? I should say she's mukadesha to you. So Tosva says, that's the whole point of the lashon. Hare at mikudeshet li means, you are mikudeshet to be mine. That's the point. So by virtue of the fact that you are asura to everyone else, you become uniquely mine. Now that sense of uniqueness is the very meaning of hegdash. Because the word hegdash, even kipshuto, means, as Tosus points out, it means essentially miyuchedet, mizumenet, uniquely defined, dedicated, as we say in English. But dedicated has nothing to do with holiness. Dedicated means for that purpose only. I always use the example of a dedicated fax line. They used to say, do you have a dedicated fax line or use your phone line for, what do you mean? Dedicated fax line means I gave it to tzedakah or to kegdash. No, it means it's dedicated to this one purpose, which is so beautifully expressed in the fact that we call a prostitute a kiddesha. Why? As Rashi says, she's totally dedicated to sex. I mean, that's her entire purpose. So the idea, therefore, of kiddushin has nothing to do with holiness or sacredness. It has to do with dedication, yichud, specificity. Now, the more specific, the more dedicated, the more kodesh. So therefore, hareat mekudeshet, in the simple way the Gemara is explaining it over here, liotli is an insight into the common meaning of mekudeshet. By being similar to Hegdash and usher to everything else, you become dedicated to me. By being a telephone line that no one is allowed to utilize other than for a fax, you become a dedicated fax line. That's the reason that we use Kiddushin and Kiddusha to mean dedication. Okay, so now the question, of course, is, which is which? Is the dedication a result of the kinyan, and the essential relationship is the kinyan, or is the dedication the essence of the kinyan? Now, the ra'ah, this is amazing, because we just had this in Gittin, guys. It's so exciting. Come on. How come nobody looks excited over here, and they're all hiding behind these silly letters, particularly English letters, or weird pictures? Ah! We actually got Naftali for a minute in there. Aha! All right, so what do you think, Naftali? Exciting? Fantastic? All right, so which comes first? Listen to this incredible proof of the Ra'ah, which you should all have thought of instantly because we just had it in Gittin. Who is the Ra'ah, by the way? The Ra'ah is the fifth generation grandchild of the Razah, Rav Zrachya HaLevi, who wrote the Sefer Amor, which was the big question, the Sefer on the Rif, which the Ramban wrote about in the Sefer Milchomas, in which he argues for the Rifs against the Baal Hamor, and so this is like major stuff. Five generations later, we come out with the Ra'ah. By the way, many people for generations thought that the Ra'ah was the secret author, because he never revealed who he is, of the Sefer HaChinuch. So who was Deep Throat? That was the question. So for many years, it was assumed that it was the Ra'ah. Actually, Now it's pretty mikubal that it isn't the ra'a, but we still don't really know. All right. But anyway, so the ra'a, this, and the ra'a also, by the way, we're talking about a long time ago. This is 12th century. So his raya is from the Gemara we just had in Gittin. That unbelievable Gemara, two brothers, Reuven and Shimon. Reuven says, Harea mekudeshet li, to everyone except my brother Shimon. Remember? And Shimon says, Harea mekudeshet li, to everyone but my brother Reuven. So we said over there that Shimon's Kedushin was not Kedushin. Why? Because he didn't answer her on anybody else. Reuven had already answered her on the rest of the world. And when he added the Kedushin, he didn't say including Reuven, he said excluding Reuven. So only if he would have said including Reuven, then his Kedushin would have been a Kedushin, because then he asked her on Reuven. But if he didn't ask her on anybody, the Gemara says it's not Kedushin. Why is it not Kedushin? It's certainly a Kenyan. If the Isser on everybody else is only an emergent aspect of having a Kenyan, so it's still Kedushin, okay, it happens to be. There was no one else in the world to ask her on. Therefore, says he brilliantly, and he was a well-known philosopher and astronomer, and so we're talking about real Gedolim. So therefore, you see clearly from that Gemara that the Kedushin actually is what defines in the end the meaning of the Kenyan of Kedushin. Okay, now it may well be that there are two different aspects, and each of them has its own impact in terms of the halacha, because I don't think that anybody would suggest that she has to give back the money to Shimon, right? In other words, there was a Kenyan, but then what was the Kenyan for? It wasn't a Kenyan Kedushin, but it was a Kenyan. Can there be two completely different things, a Kenyan and a Kedushin? Oh, all things to put into your pipe to smoke, right? Even on the golf course, Naftali, even on the golf course, you can still smoke. So, okay, so that brings us to the next stage. All right, so now we understand why we want to use the word Kenyan, and why in the second paragraph we want to use the word Kedushin. And then the question is, why did we switch from the focus on the man and the focus of the woman? The second parak talks about the man doing the Kedushin. And the first parak focuses on the woman being niknate. If the idea of using the word Kenyan was simply to bring, Barnea, you're going to get tired. I've drinking already many times while you're sitting there blabbing and you have no idea what's going on around you. It can't just be a habit of holding a cup. You get very tired in that way. You know?
My granddaughter brought me a piece of clay. I said, yes, that's a clay we stole me by Chingy. What can I tell you?
We should have known it was Barnea's neighborhood. The whole Bayat Sheni was probably Barnea's neighborhood. The important thing is to make the Bayat Shlishi Barnea's neighborhood. Stop looking at the past. You're very, very focused on the past. I'll bet you probably believe in this archaeology stuff even.
I'm sorry, but Yirmiyahu says, "Benibna Sa'ir al Tilah." It will be rebuilt on the mound of its destruction. So this oil lamp is from under my house from Bayit Rishon. And the ash is from Korban Bayit Sheni from under my house.
I should know when I'm out of my league to keep my mouth shut so we can do a little bit of learning.
Participating with this daf kedushin again with Rebbe is Benibnes Ir Al Tila.
How many times have you done this daf with me?
I'm gonna say six, but I could be off.
I'm using my Gemara from 1978 or 79.
Okay, very good. But that's not a tale. That's an aviv. Okay, so now the question is, why don't we talk about the male's focus over here? Instead of a Isha Niknate, we could still bring out this tremendous chiddush about Kinyanim, and we could talk about the man being Kaina, Ha'ish Koneh B'Shalosh Adrachim, or Shalosh Drachim. We'll talk about that in a minute. Well, that's Mishum Degaboy L'Misna Seifa. Wait a minute. In the end, the Mishnah says, V'kona et atzma. So it's talking about the woman, Bin Koneh herself. Well, once it's focused on the woman, and we maintain the focus on the woman in the beginning. Aisha niknet vekoneh. Well, I mean, why can't we say Aish koneh umakneh? Well, when he dies, he hasn't exactly given her anything, has he? He's just removed from the equation. So therefore, since Mishum de'ika mitat ha'baal, the law of iuka makne, the death of the husband is not the kinyan that is given to her by the husband. That's a gift of the Lord. Minshamayahu de maknela. Well, you know, it depends on how things have been going. But anyway, so this is coming from the Shamayim. It's not a kinyan in the normal sense from him, and therefore it has to say she's kona, despite the fact that he's not makne. So therefore we say Hayisha kona. Or Or I could give you another reason for why it's important to talk about Haisha Niknet. Because the focus on the woman as being the Niknet makes it very clear that she is intimately involved in this transaction. If it would say Ish Koneh, then it seems to be focused on a position of strength. Well, he goes ahead and he's Koneh. So I might have thought, Afamina filu ba'al korcha, maybe he could be kona even through forcibly being kona her. Tana ha'isha niknet, therefore it says, no. This is only with her full involvement. Mida'ata in, shelo mida'ata lo. Now what kind of crazy Afamina would there be that you could simply go and be kona a woman but on one side kinyan? That's ridiculous. But what it could mean is that, look, remember we had the idea of Teluhu Vizavin? We hang a guy up until he agrees to sell. Teluhu Vizavin, if he says, okay, I'll sell. Zvina Zvine. So maybe, although you can't tie her up in the same way, but at least you can tie her up. And she could say, all right, we'll let you down if you agree to marry me. 3 weeks later, okay, I'm ready to get married. All right, fine. So you might think that if that's the case, that's a good kinyan. Kamashmalan, that in the essence of the kinyan of Kiddushin, that is not a good kinyan. And therefore, it wants to tell us we have to look at it from the point of the woman. Okay, then I got another problem. What is the shalosh? Why does it say shalosh drachim? Why doesn't it say shlosha? I mean, we know that the word derech can be used in different ways, as we'll see. There are words that are masculine, words that are feminine, there are words that are both masculine and feminine. But the normal way that we present things in the Torah, when we're talking about for both sexes, is we use the masculine. So how come over here we switch specifically to shalosh? It should have said shalosha. Well, I mean, it wants to say derech. Derech is found to be nikiva. It says, v'odata lemeta derech yelchu ba. Excuse me? And what about the brisa that says, b'shiva, which is masculine, drachim botkim et hazav? So if you claim that it's feminine, why doesn't it say b'sheva drachim? How come it says b'shiva? So, well, that's because derech is lashon zachar. What? Yes, it says b'derech echad, not b'derech echad, b'derech echad yetzu elecha. They will come with one column to attack you in war. U'b'shiv'ah, again, masculine, b'shiv'ah drachim yanusu lefanecha. They will run away from you in seven different paths. Wait a minute, make up your mind, man. When I ask you why you say feminine, you tell me because it has to be feminine. When I ask you when it's masculine, you say it has to be masculine. Then I ask you the Mishnah, you tell me, well, I mean, the Mishnah wants to talk about derech, so derech is feminine. Then the other Mishnah, or Braita, says derech has to be masculine. Will you make up your mind? So, Torah can't make up its mind, Rabbanan can't make up their mind. No, the idea over here is contextual. Location. Over here, we're talking about what is that referring to? Moshe Rabbeinu should teach them Torah. Torah is feminine. So because of that, we use the derech, which is feminine. And we know that the Torah is called the female because it says Torah Hashem Tmima b'shivat nafesh. So therefore, it uses la over here in Loshen Nekeva. Masha Inkain, in the story about the enemies attacking and so on, that's referring to war. Women don't make war. Men are the guys that make the wars. So, Kivan de Darka shall ish la sot milchama, the indarka shall ish la sot milchama. So, because of that, we talk about Lashon Zocha. That's the pasuk. Now, when it comes to the use of the Rabbanan, it's also very contextual. How is that? Matnitinata de lokashin, achad elagabi isha koi katanila b'lashon nekeva. We're over here, we're talking about the way to be kena an isha. Okay, so we talk about it. A isha niknet b'shalosh drachim. Mashen Kain over there in that Braita, where we're talking about the din of checking a Zav. Now, checking a Zav, remember, is irrelevant to a Zava. In both situations, you have genital bleeding or prostate leaking, fluid leaking in the male, but there's a big difference between the two dinim. Because bleeding by the female, it doesn't matter if there was some particular activity, let's say, that made that bleeding occur. It's still going to be considered to be zivot. Masha'in came by a male, if there was some activity, then it would not be metame, because it's only, we learn out from the posit, by an ishet, ki azuv zov doma, that's just going on its own. Masha'in came, over here we're talking about bisaro, and therefore it has to be machmat atzmo, velo machmat onso. So if there's anything we can attribute this leakage to, too much food, too much drink, too much exercise, whatever it is, so then it's not going to be metame. That's why we use the Lashon masculine. Why is that? There would be no point in trying to figure out why this bleeding occurred. So therefore, where we're looking to be Breidek, it's only for a male. Tani Lashon Zocha. Wait, so I don't understand. But you agreed that we would prefer to utilize the standard masculine, right? So why the heck did we get into this Derech jazz anyway in the first place? Why didn't we just use the word we usually word? Dover. Three ways. No, not three ways. There are three things that can be kona a woman. What's this three ways to be kona? So instead of using the word derech, just use davar. So why did you use shalosh? My time at Ani shalosh. Because you had to use the appropriate contextual drachim. Then don't use drachim. Utilize the word dvarim, and then you could say shalosha. Ah, but you see, we want to discuss bia. Now, bia is actually a way. It's not a thing, because we find in the pasuk that it says in Mishlei, the derech gever ba'alma, the way of a man in a young girl, kein derech isha min ha'efet. So too is the way of a woman who is seducing people. So all of this is about sex somehow has to do with a way. So therefore, we want to use the word way, is the way that things are. Wait a minute, but we have three things. We have bia and kesef and shtar. Why would we use a word that is suitable for one out of three? Kesef and shtar, ma'ikel amimar? Well, because we wanted to bring out the bia. We say two things because of one thing? Did you forget this is all about sex? In the end, what is kedushin for? So, I mean, to say, well, I mean, it's only bia, why would we use... What do you mean, only bia? For heaven's sakes, even the kesef and the shtar ultimately is for purposes. Tzorech bia ninu. Or we could say, Amani Rabbi Shimoni. We could say this is going on libe to Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon always looks for the insights into why the Torah uses an idea. Bipnei ma amra Torah ki kach ish isha, velo katav ki kilakach isha leish. How come the Torah uses this lashon, which is more mashma, that the man is empowered to take a woman? Why doesn't the Torah use the same kind of lashon that we use over here? Aisha niknet ki tilakach. So use the same lashon here. That's because of the derech. Meaning all of this is an outgrowth of the way the world is. It's darko shel ish lechazra al isha. Vein darka shel isha lechazra al ish. It's always the guy who's paying for the little plane that says, honey, will you marry me in the sky? We never find that a woman would pay, hey, Joe, would you please propose? Oh, for heaven's sakes. That would be a disaster. So even ad hayom, this is true. So therefore, since it's the derech, we want to talk about that derech. Ki yikach ish isha. Marshal, la adam sha'avdalo aveda. Somebody loses something. Who do you think goes looking around for what? The one who lost it. Mi chozer al mi. The one who lost his valuable thing. He's the one who's running around looking for what happened to it. So therefore, the same thing is true over here. The Adam HaRishon lost his tzela. Where is my beloved tzela? So he's running all over the place to try to discover his missing half. So this is the Shel Silverstein story of the Mishnah in Kiddushin. So we've got to understand the Pasuk as being written in that way as well. Now we're going to be examining tomorrow other places where we use derech instead of dover and try to figure out why each one of them focuses on the derech, because what we're claiming over here is derech is an indication of the way things are, whereas opposed to dover is very possibly just arbitrary. Then that would mean that every place that a Mishnah uses or a Braisa uses the word derech, it's telling us something about the why, not just the what. So we're going to have to look into that. Now, again, if we have, do we have Akiva? Yes. Do we have Gavi? Yes. Do we have Naftali? Yes. So you will remember that one of PK's earliest questions was to try to understand what did Nani mean when she said, who can know the way of a snake on a rock? But that's this pasuk. Derech nachash b'tzur and kein derech isha min ha'efet are all interrelated. Ha! And it ties directly into the very opening of the book, as you will note. All right, everybody, I'll let you think that out. Kol tov. Have a wonderful day. Looking forward to seeing you, Bezrat Hashem, tomorrow.